We're told in the earliest days of silent movies, no one thought a thing about musical accompaniment. It was exciting enough to watch the flickering images on the screen. True, the penny arcades often boasted mechanical pianos which played away merrily while patrons shut one eye and squinted into the kinetoscope. But there was no effort to coordinate the music to the peep show. As new inventions enabled films to be projected on a screen before an audience, they took on a greater respectability. Entrepreneurs became anxious to exploit this new field of entertainment and sought ways to attract plenty of paying customers. No one knows who first got the idea of putting a piano into his storefront theater, but it proved profitable. Somehow, live music helped to set the mood and convey emotion more effectively than the silent film alone. Some theater operators bought electric pianos, which sometimes included drums, traps, and other noisemakers, and played long piano rolls of several musical selections. Silent films gradually increased in quality, and more sophisticated audiences were attracted to movie theaters. As an evidence of culture, live piano music, perhaps augmented by an occasional violinist, came into widespread use. As the storefront theaters were gradually replaced by more luxurious film houses, the piano and violin were augmented by additional instruments until orchestras of various sizes came to be featured. Orchestra conductors followed the example of theater pianists, piecing together musical scores from snippets of classical music, the semi-classics, and the ballads of the day. Quite early in the evolution of film presentation came the development of a whole new medium of musical accompaniment, the introduction of the pipe organ into film theaters. No one knows for sure when or where this first occurred, but surely one of the first exponents of the organ for film theaters was Thomas L. Talley of Los Angeles. In 1905, Talley built a theater in Los Angeles specifically for film presentation. He had in mind a theater which would charge only modest admission, 10 cents, but which would be a quality house, deluxe in every way. Perhaps it was his love of music which prompted his choice of an organ. Orchestras were expensive. You had to pay a number of musicians to perform, and a piano did not provide the right aura of quality and luxury that he wanted. Thus, he decided upon a pipe organ. Other exhibitors scoffed. The organ had always been identified with sacred and highbrow classical music. Film patrons wanted entertainment. Talley was not dissuaded, however. A large, expensive Murray M. Harris pipe organ was installed, and a classically trained organist was hired to play it. It turned out to be a huge success. In a very real sense, the organ changed the movies, and the movies changed the organ. And that from Behold the Mighty Wurlitzer, The History of the Theater Pipe Organ by John W. Langdon. The Binghamton Theater Organ Society is opening its 2016-2017 season with a screening of the 1925 silent film classic The Phantom of the Opera, starring Lon Chaney and Mary Philbin. It's October 29th at 7:30 p.m., and WVIA's Peter Wynn paid a visit to Binghamton to talk with Paul Staple, who is founding president emeritus of the society, and organist Jim Ford, who will do the honors.
Tell me a little bit about The Phantom of the Opera that you're going to be showing.
The Phantom of the Opera is one of the more famous silent films ever made, and became even more famous when they made the sound films that Andrew Lloyd Webber, the Phantom, wrote. But it is so much more interesting, I think, when you watch this original film, which is actually a compilation of possibly three or four different remakes done back in the 1920s, in which our esteemed organ interpreter, Jim Ford, also sitting with us, is going to remake his own music, original, all original, to fit the movie. And it will have very little connection with anything that anybody now knows, even including a soundtrack that was put on in 1930 or so. So the story, of course, is basically about a disfigured male who somehow takes up residence in the huge operation of the Paris Opera House. Still exists, still there. And the original Opera House is still there, and this film was made there. It has subterranean rivers going underneath it and tunnels and rooms of all kinds of things. And this character, I'm not sure if anybody ever found out for sure whether he was disfigured at birth or because of some war accident, but he became the resident, mostly unseen but known to be there because a few people in the employ of the opera had seen him, including the lady who runs a particular box seat area, and she would see him sitting in the box with his hat on, but when she would try to actually find him again, he had disappeared. He had secret ways of getting in and out and around. So the whole story lies in the fact that this guy became very interested in a particular singer and wanted to make her a big star. And the other stars of that opera, which had just been bought by a new pair of owners, privately owned in that case, had other people that they wanted to star. And the Phantom did some pretty disastrous things to make his lady win and be star, including when they didn't feature her at the grand opening of their first opera. The chandelier dropped on the audience, and they did a masterful job of making that look very real. And you couple that with a whole lot of other incidents and what's going on in between the people who staff the film and the storyline, which is basically leads to a very fascinatingly, it's almost a chase scene of the good old days by the end. And Jim Ford is creating the music, live music, of course, that makes this film speak.
Jim, Paul says that you're going to create the music before our very ears. Now, we both know that, we all know, that Andrew Lloyd Webber did a musical version, a Broadway musical version of it. You're not going to allude to that? You're going to make it all up, start from scratch, so to speak?
Absolutely right. I'm going to make it all up. I have seen that show on Broadway, by the way, but I will not be listening to any of that score, that marvelous score. I look at the film, and I will watch it probably three or four times. I have the disc right now, and always with the sound off. I want all of the music to be original, totally, and the organ is certainly capable of producing a wealth of orchestral sounds and sound effects, and there's one pedal stop, the 32-foot resultant, which people will not only hear with the very low frequencies, they will actually feel them. Literally shakes, yes, shakes the rafters. And the film itself is pretty intense at times, there's no doubt about it. I think I'd probably label it PG. It might be a little too much for very young children, but for anyone who has no fear of a Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump presidency, you have nothing to worry about. But we do these things for fun. It's going to be a great season. Paul has put together this marvelous season of three silent films and two concerts. I have the honor of playing the accompaniment for the three silent films that are being done. and it's something I really enjoy doing. I mean, some people like to ride motorcycles, some people like to ski down a ski slope, but for me, to look at the action on the screen and come up with original ideas that help to make the story come alive, that is something that I really enjoy doing.
So, for the better, well, with a break in the middle, you're going to be playing for an hour and a half, and you don't get tired.
Well, not really, because the time just flies by, honestly. I can't describe why, but you just get into it. You get into it, you follow the storyline, and you're watching for cues to play certain themes that I want to come up with, or sound effects, certainly, and the time goes by very, very quickly.
We are very fortunate, because people who can do this kind of playing are rare. In the entire world, I doubt if there are 100 persons throughout the English-speaking world, which is where most silent films were made and used in the good old days, are still being played and performed at. And the people who have the ability to tell the emotional story via music from original stuff, just like jazz players are, is present in Jim Ford. It's such a unique ability. We're very pleased that he lives here and is able to do these shows for us. It's a big deal.
Now, the second film on your program this season has me very interested. Is this film Chicago with Phyllis Haver? I mean, we all know the musical Chicago. Never knew that there was a film like this. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I don't know everything about how it began, but there was an original silent movie called Chicago, again, written from the book. It's essentially the story of a wife who played around a little too much and got in a position where she ended up essentially accidentally shooting one of her drop-in friends, and the way her husband, who was a very quiet, determined man who wanted to keep his marriage together, follows all the action when his wife, played by Phyllis Haver, tries to become a star, because her name's written in all the Chicago papers at the time, a thing that happened in Chicago. And she does become that star, but it doesn't help her in the least in the long run. And the story has almost a good ending compared to what could have been. And the music for it, again, very difficult to bring out all these particular emotions, and there's a lot of them. There's comedy, of course. There's also the actions that happen around the shooting and the courtroom scenes. It's a great story, and because of the film having been found, the original film copy was found in Cecil B. DeMille's private library, I believe after he passed away, and the previous versions were all gone. So our restoring person, David Shepard, who lives in Hat Creek, California right now, and has a troop of highly professional remastering people, they were able to take this original film and create it in a way that it's just like watching a movie today. It just happens to be in black and white. And it's silent, and therefore Jim Ford can take and make these emotions come out very, very strongly.
The Broadway musical version had a good deal of humor in it, sardonic humor. Is there a lot of humor in this, or is it mostly drama?
Well, I think the humor is there. It's probably 50-50. The humor comes in some of the funny things that happen to the detectives and the ways that they played the show, some of the scenes being worked out, is where the humor comes in. And these days, I think we can find even more humor in it than perhaps when it was released. So it's just an excellent combination of acting abilities.
Now, Jim, since this movie obviously has a lot more humor than Phantom of the Opera, how does that influence the way you play and the way you approach the movie?
Well, there are some registrations that you can use on a pipe organ that sound very, very comical, humorous. You can use a 2 2/3. You can use what is called the canura stop, a stop which is unique to theater pipe organs. It's been described as a tuned buzz, and that's really what it is. So there are many techniques that the organist can use, mm-hmm, to provide whatever we need in the way of comedy.
Another one of the big deals is what we do. Our mission is to use this organ to maximum capacity and effect. It's a fairly large, what we call four manuals, meaning keyboards plus the pedals. So it's really five different keyboards, all of which power 24 different ranks of pipes, more than 1,700 pipes, each batch of which create a different sound, and which the organist, using the expertise that he has of how to put these sounds together, is what makes this entire operation unique and why we exist. We exist because this instrument is here. It was built in 1922, and it was meant for silent movies. And we're using it for that still, as well as the couple of musical programs that we also do, because it imitates the orchestra as if you had a pop symphony on stage being all handled by one keyboard artist.
Well, let's move on to the third movie, which even to my mind is even less familiar than Chicago. At least we got a hint of it from Candor and Ebb, The Lodger, which is Alfred Hitchcock film. I find that, you know, Alfred Hitchcock was such a presence on television in the movies when I was a young fella. I find it hard to believe that he went all the way back to the silent film days.
Well, Alfred was living in London at the time when silent movies were still going. That was how his career started. And The Lodger is a fascinating story, which Jim is going to have a challenging way of interpreting, because it relates to a lady who was a renter. She thought her new renter was some kind of Jack the Ripper person. So I'm hoping that that when you see this movie, that you understand that you're seeing a story that's picked up within another story of that era. Jack the Ripper being the guy who did in a whole lot of ladies in London in those previous days.
Yeah, and for people in 1925, the memory of Jack the Ripper was probably still pretty fresh, because he was, what, in the 1890s, if I recall correctly?
Something like that.
Yeah, yes. So this was not ancient history for them.
I wanted to mention that I suggested doing The Lodger, including The Lodger on our in our season, because I accompanied that film down at Bucknell University. I received a call from a professor who was teaching a course on Hitchcock, and of course his earliest films were silent, and wondered if I'd be interested to accompany it. And of course I was delighted to be asked, and I went down there, and they have a beautiful theater in town there. I believe it's called the Campus Theater, and it was just a lot of fun. And that's why I suggested maybe we should do it up here in Binghamton. And that's what we're planning to do.
What quality is the print? Now, these other two have been restored. Is this also a restored print, or is this one in its original, in good original shape?
I believe it has been restored, and it was in excellent condition, excellent shape.
Now, do you work to make your interpretations different? If I were to, you know, close my eyes and listen to, you know, a sample from each of your movies, would I be able to tell which one you were doing? Do you think you can make it that different?
That's what the goal is, certainly, Peter. And as I say, the action on the screen is what writes the score. And I am a composer. I have written two scores for original musical comedies. And it's very similar to what you're doing. If you have a particular character who is experiencing something, you try to get into their brain and write music that would express what they're thinking or saying or about to say after they sing their song. And that's how I go about it. But with a silent film, it's the instantaneous feeling that I have for the music that is needed at that particular moment. It comes out spontaneously during the performance.
Do any scores survive for the old silent films? Are they available? If you wanted to, could you actually recreate a score that was heard back in the 1920s?
Well, yes, there are some. I have never personally seen any, but you'll remember, I think it was back in the 1980s when the movie Napoleon was shown. It was a very long movie. It was shown at Radio City Music Hall with a full orchestra. And as I recall, Francis Ford Coppola's father conducted the orchestra. There are definitely scores that were written for silent film.
The studios would send out big scores for pit orchestras to play from for the movies that they made, that they spent big money on. And, of course, that is what helped the theater organ become developed, because most small theaters around the country and around the world couldn't afford pit orchestras to play for all their repeat showings of movies. So the theater organ was developed, and it was a somewhat lesser expensive way of providing music, as long as you had a musician who could play it and make it sound well and bring out the emotions of the movie. So that was essentially the beginning of the theater organ, because those scores were written, but they needed to find a cheaper way to play them. The Musicians Union loved us in those days, but they did work. They allowed the movies to be heard in a way that had not been possible before.
Now, you do have two just straight concerts on the program. Tell me a little bit about each of those.
Well, we have a new resident organist named Nancy Wildener, a local organist at a big church, of which one of our famous predecessors, M. Cyril Wright, was the organist for many years after he retired from Columbia University. And Nancy is doing shows that are great fun. Her show is going to be one of basically the big hits from each decade, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 20, and 2010s. And she picks the biggest and the best of the radio hits. Then we were very fortunate to be able to book a young man named David Gray, who's Scottish-born. He's probably 27 now, still considered young as compared to the 18-year-olds that are out there also doing stuff. But I heard David play at the Wurlitzer, that's at the State Fairgrounds in Syracuse in May. And he was absolutely, and I've seen plenty of organists, he was unbelievable. He could do things with his fingers and his feet that I doubt if anybody could do all of that at that age. And he does it all from memory. He does it, and he makes an incredible story. So we were able to book him on, April 22nd. And he's putting together with a program with a local trumpeter who is very well known for years as having been the principal trumpet of the opera and the symphony locally, Frank Gabriel Campos. And Frank is a master of every field that a trumpet can be played. And he is working with David Gray, they're like two geniuses at the top level of their professions, to create a program that no one will have ever heard before. We don't yet know all the exact ways it's going to come out, because it's developing still in their minds, but it's going to be a very fascinating program indeed. So those would make our two shows that are going to be musicals only without any film in them. And it's going to be an exciting year. It's our second full season in which we encourage our members to be members by also giving them only the right to have a 5-pack season ticket for 5 concerts. That way, with their membership, they become a major supporter for us, and at the same time get the least expensive ticket that we can give for any of our shows. So it's an exciting year for us to watch this membership and subscription series build as it has been. And we invite everyone to give us a call at 773-1495. That's area 607-773-1495. That reaches the box office. And I will help them out and get them the best seats possible.
And, of course, all your performances are at the Forum Theater, which is quite a place.
Yes, they have to be there because that's where the organ is. The Forum is owned by the county, so therefore everybody who is at least a tax-paying resident of Broome County owns the organ, and we invite everybody else to enjoy it also, of course.
We hope people will come out. And Phantom of the Opera is being shown on Saturday night, the 29th, of October, Halloween weekend, and it would make a great date, you know.
And if people don't get a chance to call us or get tickets ahead of time in some other way, We are open 2 hours before showtime, so that at 5:30, the box office at the Forum will be open, and we will make sure that they have plenty of good seats to sit in. We do reserve seats, by the way. That's another big deal. We purposely do not seat anybody every other row, so that the view you get when you buy through us at the Forum, you never have someone directly in front of you blocking your view, which is a big deal for us in a combination with our season subscription prices.
Paul Staple, founding president emeritus, and Jim Ford, resident master theater organist, speaking with WVIA's Peter Wynn about the Binghamton Theater Organ Society and its 2016-2017 season. The first event of the season is Saturday, October 29th at 7:30 p.m., a screening of the 1925 silent film classic, The Phantom of the Opera, starring Lon Chaney and Mary Philbin. The second film, December 18th, a Sunday afternoon at 2, and the film will be Chicago, featuring Phyllis Haver. And the third and final film of the season, Saturday, March 11th at 7:30, a screening of The Lodger, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Jim Ford will accompany each of these films with original music, his own music created on the spot, on the historic Robert Morton Theater organ at the Forum Theater, 236 Washington Street in Binghamton. For more information on the web, binghamtontos.org. BinghamtonTOS.org, and that stands for Binghamton Theater Organ Society. BinghamtonTOS.org, and the phone number Paul Staple gave us, area code 607-773-1495, area code 607-773-1495. The first event of the Binghamton Theater Organ Society 2016-2017 season, this Saturday, October 29th, 7:30 p.m., the 1925 silent film classic, The Phantom of the Opera, starring Lon Chaney and Mary Philbin. In addition to the films, there will be two special concerts. Nancy Wildner will present Pop Pipes, Chart Toppers, big hits from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and on. That's on January 22nd. And David Gray and Frank Gabriel Campos will appear on April 22nd. Those are standalone concerts without films. The Binghamton Theater Organ Society, and for more information on the web, BinghamtonTOS.org, BinghamtonTOS.org. Thank you, Peter Wynn.